And good morning to you. We're coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions. I'm Tom McCubbin. I'm your host today for Better Lawns and Gardens. Teresa's out enjoying the Chelsea Flower Show, or she will shortly. She's over in London right now. And I'm an extension agent emeritus with the University of Florida. What that means is you're retired and you just get to do things for free. How about that?
Wait, isn't that part of just gardening life, period, it seems like?
I think so. And I'm a host emeritus from Better Lawns and Gardens also. I think Teresa bestowed that upon me. Lizzie, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, good. Thank you. It's hot, hot, hot. That's all I can say. You know, it feels like summer already. Now, summer hadn't arrived yet, but it's hot, hot, hot. You know, it looks like the state of Florida is going to be in the 90s throughout this week, and the lows, so probably lower 70s, upper 60s in some of the more northern areas, but
I'm going to tell you the same thing that I tell Teresa. Stop saying those bad words.
Yeah, it was going to be here all summer long.
True facts.
So I kind of try to figure out how long we're going to have this. And I figure from now through about the end of October, when Halloween finally rolls around, we'll start to cool down. I don't know. It's still a great state to live in. We have spring from late October all the way through about now, so I don't know. I want to tell everybody how my vegetable garden did.
Okay.
I am not happy with my tomatoes.
Oh.
And, well, you and I had a discussion. You weren't happy with yours either.
I
have two plants. I grew about 16 different varieties, and it took me a while. You know, I'm a horticulturist. I've been doing this for over 50-some years, and you think I've seen everything. But all of a sudden, the tomato plants start going out, and I said, you know, am I having problems with the root systems? Am I having trouble with some manure that I put down? First of all, I was blaming on manure. I said, must have been hot manure. So I burned the plants. I've done that with turkey. I've done it with turkey manure.
Have you?
Yes. I did a little experiment at the University of Maryland, and another friend and I had a bet that I could do as well as he could with turkey manure. I'd use turkey manure. He'd use regular commercial fertilizer. I burnt the devil out of my plants.
That is crazy.
And he wouldn't let me try again. He said, nope, we had a bet. That's the way it is. But anyway, so what I think happened to the tomato plants in the end are very small mites. They're called aerified mites. And I think they were up in the tops, and they moved over from some peppers. I have some peppers that I planted last fall that are burying their hearts out. We didn't get cold. We didn't get frost. We didn't get freezes this winter. So the pepper plants are still doing fine.
But it was really cold, though, this winter.
You're in a colder area, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm over in Forest City, so we're a little warmer. We got a little lake effect there, I guess.
Oh, there you go.
And you're a little colder than the rest of us. But we hit 34, and everything made it through. The tomato plants, the ones I kept, I did cover them, and they made it through. But the pepper plants did, too. So I've been eating peppers coming out my ears.
Oh, you know, that's the way I am with sweet onions. Like, I cannot give away enough sweet onions in this building, like, to the point where everybody goes, Lizzie, I've already got enough.
I know. I had that same problem with squash and cucumbers. I gave them to my neighbors. Then all of a sudden, I start walking up to the yard, and nobody's home.
It's
I mean, their car's there. I can hear the TV on, but nobody comes to the door. Here he comes again when he's squashing cucumbers. And that happens. Well, I did well with the peppers, of course, the broccoli, cauliflower. They're all out now. And onions. I have onions also, and they're doing well. And I raise a lot of flowers. So I have snapdragons and zinnias and things of that nature. But tomatoes were the downfall, and not only me, but my son, my neighbor. So I know it's got to be those aerified mites. And aerified mites are small, 1/125th of an inch quite often. So anyway, so what will we be doing? Well, we're going to find that out because Bob Hodling joins us during hour number two, and he's got his garden coming up. And so we'll talk about that. That's hour number two. One problem that I've been contacted about, and this are plants wilting after planting. In this case, they were some buttercups and some bush daisies. And my advice is, and I've had this problem also, I put in some bush daisies. My suggestion is just make sure that the root system is nice and moist when you plant them. So quite often you get them from a garden center, and you don't look at them, you put them in the ground, and the root system's dry. In that particular case, the plants are probably going to wilt, and you may not be able to re-wet the root system. So just make sure the root system stays moist. It's going to take some time before those roots grow out into the surrounding soil. And if you don't keep them nice and moist, then they're going to start to wilt down on you during the daytime. My neighbor came over to me and said, you know, I put in those buttercups and I have to shade them during the daytime.
That's what I'm running into with my baby okra, like the plants that are growing. Like, I know everything is moist around them. So what would you suggest to make sure that's wet? How could we do that?
Well, you keep a little mulch and you water them in the morning, probably a couple of times a day for new plants like that.
Okay.
And then after a while, they'll do okay. They'll start to come out on their own. They'll start to produce their own root system.
All right.
But yeah, it's a problem for new plants, especially at this time of the year. But we notice that it's just hot and extra moisture is needed. But my neighbor also got a group of plants and divided them. And so when he divided them, he also damaged some roots. So
that,
it had less of a root system.
That may have been my problem. But you know what I switched up to? Cedar chips instead of as a covering over the top to try to help cut down on some of these bugs.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if it'll work.
Cedar chips are fine. You just have to make sure everything stays kind of moist. That's the main thing. Hey, coming up next, I've got a little report here about how spinach helps prevent plant disease. You want to know about it? Yeah. Well, we'll tell you about it. Don't worry about it. That's coming up next. So don't go away. We'll be back. We're coming to you, of course, from the Summit Responsible Solution. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And good morning to you. I'm glad you joined us this morning. This doesn't sound like Teresa, does it? Well, Lizzie's here, but Teresa's out enjoying. I have been to the Chelsea Flower Show. I was there for the 100th anniversary, and it was really nice. The only thing, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Most of it's undercover, but there's a lot of it out or surrounding the area, the display area. And it was raining, and what I remember is wet feet.
Oh, wow.
I hate wet feet.
I think she was calling to kind of rub it in last night. She was checking in to thank both of us. And she said, guess how cold the temperature is going to be while we're there for the next few days. And I go, I'm just throwing out a number, 65. She says, yeah, 60 to 65 with no rain. And I go,
oh, well, she's lucky it's no rain.
I know.
Yeah. Well, that is a nice temperature. That's pretty typical of London, I think, that area there. Mm-hmm. 65 at this time of the year. So,
nice.
And when we were there, it was overcast. Kind of rain was off and on. Wet soil, wet feet. Ah, well, it was good. It was still nice. Hey, I promised you I was going to tell you what spinach can do to help our plants. And I've heard about this some time ago, but I guess the university's starting to revive this and starting to reuse it. But spinach has some antimicrobial peptides. And I had to look up and see what a peptide is. Do you know what a peptide is?
Is that something that you take for a stomach ache?
Yeah, that's something similar, but no. No, they're short chains of amino acids, and they act as building blocks for proteins, and they're found in your body. But evidently, spinach has some. If they get them into plants, like citrus trees, and also potatoes. They get them in potatoes to prevent a bacterial disease in there. So they get them in through a virus. They have a benign virus, and they get the peptide product in through them, and I guess the plant keeps making it is what it does. So they infect the plant with these peptides and antimicrobial peptides, mm-hmm. and it will help fight the bacteria that causes greening and also this potato problem.
Oh.
So it's kind of neat. I don't know. We'll see. They're still working with it. But I'd heard some time ago that they had something like this. And so it's a benign virus. It's neat how they get things in there. And this is through a virus. So they have to infect the plant with the virus that I guess continues to make the peptide, antimicrobial peptide. Well, anyway, we'll see. I've got my best vegetables for summer here. I figure if you're interested in a summer garden, you've already given one okra.
Yes.
And you like okra?
Okay. Yes, no.
I like it fried.
Yeah, see, I do like it. There's so much to it if you're going to do it right. Like, you have to soak it in buttermilk to get the slimy and blah. There's a lot of work to it for me, and I do cook a lot, but if I can find someone who can make it right, I'm all about it.
Yeah, I like fried okra, and I like the okra that's ham wrapped in it and sour, I don't know, cream cheese or something like that. That's okay if you get them like that. I don't want to make it. If somebody makes it for me,
high five. I got you right here.
Yep,
the same way.
There we go. I'll enjoy it. Cherry tomatoes, another good one for summertime. That will be a neat one for us. The big tomatoes don't set. Cherry tomatoes, some of them will set. So I am going to restart my cherry tomato seeds. Chayotes. Have you ever grown chayote?
Mm-mm.
Chayote's a squash, and it's a big fruit. It produces a big fruit, and you have to have vines. And I grew it a couple times. A friend of mine made pickled chayotes. It tastes like apples, the pickled apples where they're cinnamon.
Really?
And everything. Yeah, she did a great job with that.
Interesting.
And Joni made some one time. We made some. But when you have chayotes, you can get the chayote at the grocery store, and you put it in the ground, and it'll start this vine coming out. And you have to have something for the vine to climb on.
Okay.
Because the vine climbs all over God's little acre, okay? And it starts producing fruits. And then you got to figure out what you're going to do with the fruit, because you get so many. It's a squash-type plant.
Right.
So we had we made the pickled chayotes, and then we made false apple pie from the chayotes. And the you can put anything together and put the apple seasoning in it, and you get apple pie, like they do it with Ritz crackers or something like that.
Yes.
Okay, so we made that, and my daughter really loved it. So we made false apple pie out of chayote. You can also boil them, cook them like squash. It's a fairly large type fruit. Southern peas is the other thing. My friend Bob Hodling, who will be with us during second hour, has southern peas, and we were out in his garden this week, and he gave me a pea, and I popped it open, and I was eating the pea seeds out of it. I like southern peas.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the family didn't, so we didn't have that many, but
right.
I would get some every once in a while. Sweet potatoes, that's the other thing that's going to grow well during the summertime. It likes the heat, doesn't mind the heat, and it just keeps on growing, so it works out pretty well. Those are the main things that I will grow during the summertime. There are other things you can grow, Seminole pumpkins, if you want that. They grow all over the place also. The calabasa, another type of squash, malanga, roselli. Okay, let's go to something more colorful here. How about my best flowers for summer? Okay.
Oh, this is interesting because, you know, with heat, it's hard to find something that's going to withstand that.
It is. And I have my three best for the summer, for flower color that's going to hold up. Number one is pentas, and pentas will do just fine. Also, they come in different colors. You got the reds, you got the whites, the pinks, and the lavenders. And they bring in the butterflies, which is kind of nice.
Yes.
And the red ones will bring in the hummingbirds. Now, somebody says, well, you said they'll bring them in. If the hummingbirds are not in your area, don't expect them to show up. But if you have some hummingbirds, and we do have some hummingbirds in our area, so they will start coming in for the pentas. And the butterflies just seem to come out of nowhere, and they're all over the place.
You know what? Because I can't have milkweed on my property because it'll kill turkeys kind of situation.
Really?
Yeah, milkweed we can't have. And also, believe it or not, they can eat tomatoes all day, but if they eat the vine or the leaves, it can kill them.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I digress. But I'm loving my oregano. I did it as like a landscape around one of my flowering areas, and it's huge, and it's got the pretty white things and the bees and the butterflies and the wasps. Ugh. But anyway, they all love this.
Yeah, well, the wasps are beneficial. So
I know. I won't kill them.
I know. We have to have them come in, too. Yeah, but that's neat that you've got that going on. I also have a foliage plant that I rely on, coleus.
Yes.
And many different colors. It's a coat of different colors. And you have to be careful when you're buying them because some of them take the sun, some don't. All of them grow in the shade. But you'll have some that will take the sun and do fairly well. Others won't.
So kind of partial shading on them is what you would suggest?
Yeah, filtered sun is really good.
How much watering do they need?
Once they get established, they shouldn't have any problem. You know, it's a story about they have to get established. The root ball has to remain moist. Once it starts growing out in the surrounding soil, if you water probably twice a week, 2 to 3 times a week, then they're going to do just fine.
Okay.
And if you get the rains, they're going to do without any problem at all. So my other one here is bush daisies. I already mentioned bush daisies. You've got to get them established. Mine are established now. They're doing fine. Bush daisies will grow year-round with those little yellow flowers, which is kind of nice. And if it's in the shade, it's impatiens. And I love having impatiens, and I do have a number of them. I have them in hanging baskets. I have some impatiens that are well over a year old in hanging baskets. And if you can,
really?
Well, you got to water them and fertilize them, and if you do that, they'll grow fine. I have one I hang out front in the front yard, and I get kind of scared that somebody's going to be coming by and taking it down and enjoying it themselves, but nobody's taking it down yet. So I don't know. A couple more. We've got begonias, which do fine. Get them established. They do better if they have filtered sun. And marigolds. I have sown marigold seeds. I love marigolds. And Tarina, a lot of people don't know Tarina. It's also called wishbone flower. Why in the devil would you call anything wishbone flower?
Right.
Well, if you look at the little flower, you get down close, and you look inside, and the stamens, which are the male flower portions, form a wishbone inside, and you can see a little wishbone.
Now I'm going to have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, Tarina. And last of all is zinnias, and that's what's on my list of summer flowers. But the top ones are pentas, coleus, bush daisies, and I guess I put impatiens on that also.
All right. Well, we have a text message. It says, Mike from Venice. He says, hi, Tom. Nice to hear your voice. We had 2.25 inches of much-needed rain this past week in Venice. Looking forward to the summer rains returning.
Yep, me too. I had about 5 inches of rain. You must have had a lot of rain in your area also.
Well, we did this for about 3 days, it seemed like, and I was very, very excited about that.
Yeah, now it's backing off, and I don't think we're going to have any rain for a week.
I might have to fist fight you for saying stuff like that.
I know.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, we also have a note here from Howie and Karen at Peterson Nursery in Lakeland, and they're having their orchid lecture today, and that... They're all at 9:30, and 9:30 to 10:30. So
and bring a chair. Always bring a chair, just in case.
Yep, bring your chair. There's not a lot of seating room that they can provide, but if you bring your chair, you're guaranteed a seat. That's kind of neat. But everybody knows, if you're in the area, you know where Peterson Nursery and Garden Center is. It's a great place, and Howie and Karen are always very welcoming.
They have an amazing staff. So, you know, like people like to shop at Publix because of the staff experience, right?
I know. Yeah.
That's the way it is at Peterson's Nursery. Like, that's the way I can to a Floridian or a person who lives in Florida. If you want that, go see them in Lakeland, if you're near Lakeland, because they have an amazing staff that want to help.
They've been there a long time, too.
Yes.
And I've given lectures there, and Teresa's giving lectures there. It's just really a great place to visit, for sure. A couple of things I want to remind you of. If you're going to do it, May is the last month in most areas of the state to fertilize. So if you're going to be putting out lawn fertilizer, check with your county or a municipality and see what the rules are. But quite often there's no fertilizing from June until October, and that's for ornamentals also. It's also the lawns and also ornamentals. And the other thing is there's an exemption to that in most areas. If you have plants in containers, the rule doesn't apply to that. So you can fertilize your plants in containers. The other thing is if you fertilize and the lawn is looking kind of on the, what you might say, the yellow side, kind of peaked, maybe some iron. Just put out some iron. You can get some liquid iron or you can get granular iron. It's amazing if you have an iron deficiency how quick that will green up a lawn. And I did that with a Bahia lawn one time. I had a Bahia lawn, and it was turning yellow, and I went out and got some iron. In this case, it was a granular form. Put it on, and about 2 days later, it was the brightest green lawn I've seen in a long time.
Oh, that's good to know. Really, I love
really
that.
Really kind of neat. Spring can be dry, so if it's dry, just make sure you're watering in between the showers that are coming through. So thank you for being with us today. If you want to give us a call, you certainly can. 1-888-45-LAWNS, 1-888-455-2967. Or Texas 23680. See if I can answer your question. We'll be right back. I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And good morning to you. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We're here for you today, by the way. If you want to give us a call, you certainly can. Number here is 1-888-455-2967. That's 1-888-45-LAWNS. Or you can text us at 23680. We're happy to talk with you. And if you missed any of the program today, you can hear us on Better Lawns and Gardens, on betterlawns.com, on audioboom.com, iHeart, iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon. So go ahead and get with us, and you can listen to the program if you missed any of it. And you can also sign up for Teresa's newsletter, which is a great one. You can check it out on Facebook and on her website, she-consulting.com. That's she, and you put a dash in there, consulting.com. So it's free subscription. Let me answer a question here. Jeannie in Pompeii wrote in, good morning. Love to hear Tom. Thank you. I appreciate that. I love to be heard. she wants to know where to plant 1 gallon azalea bushes. Do they need full or partial sun or shade and watering schedule? What about that? Well, I will tell you that we really need to probably put them in filtered sun. That's the best area. They'll grow in the shade. This is azaleas, folks. Azaleas used to be very popular throughout much of Central Florida northward. And in Central Florida, I can tell you the popularity has dwindled. And one of the problems is that the soil pHs are all pretty much bordering alkaline. And if you don't do something to make sure the azaleas have the minor nutrients they need or have the acid soil, then they're going to go out on you. So you really need to go through and put them in a partial shade if you can. Morning sun, afternoon shade will probably work. Improve the soil if you can. They'll grow in sand, especially the southern Indian types. And then make sure to stay moist. Make sure that root ball is moist when you put it in the soil. If it doesn't stay moist, then you're going to have a problem. They're going to go ahead and wilt and die down on you. Let's see what else you need. Partial sun, yep, shade. Partial sun's okay, shade. And watering, when they go in the ground, every day for the first probably couple of weeks, and then every 2 to 3 days, and they'll do just fine for you. And just keep them moist and fertilize them using Azalea Camellia fertilizer. We'll do it once in March, once in May, once in early October. Keep a mulch on the surface of the soil. The azaleas are just a plant that needs a fair amount of care. So I was going for Gene. Okay, let's see. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Citrus County. Your favorite tomatoes and peppers. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Tom.
Yes,
good
hi,
to
Jerry.
Hear you on the radio.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here today, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
My
I'd like to know what...
Yeah, you want to know my favorites?
Yeah.
Okay.
Easiest to grow, the best production, you know.
You know, most tomatoes grow pretty well. I pick the ones that have some good resistance. Sweet Million, if you want a cherry tomato that's just going to bear its heart out for you, Sweet Million does very well, and I always grow that one.
Yes.
And there are other little smaller tomatoes. Sweet Treat, I like that one. The seed on that one, by the way, costs about 75 cents a seed, so I start them from seed. But there's other little cherry tomatoes, but Sweet Million seems to do the best. Of the slicers, I like Champion. It's a good one. I have a Better Bell producing right now, which is doing well. But most of them seem to do. Better Boy, always been a winner for a lot of people. And those have some disease of quality of resistant. And I am concerned about nematode resistance, so I will go ahead and plant ones that say on the label they're nematode resistant. And that's true and not true, because there's different types of root knot nematode. And they'll be resistant to some types but not others, so you still may get root knot if a certain strain of root knot is in your soil. Now, when it comes to peppers, number one on my book is Better Bell, developed by the University of Florida. It has produced for me time and time again. That's what I'm harvesting right now, nice big ones. Another variety that's done well is called Touchdown, and I've grown King Arthur, which has done well, and also Star of the North, which was a good one. So, but Better Bell heads the list, Jerry, so that would be one that I would plant. How's that sound?
Very good. Okay. Very good. I'm going to try some of those. I got Sweet Million. So
yeah, Sweet Million. Yeah. There's Sweet Cherry Princes, which is another one. You can get all these different varieties, by the way, from Tomato Grower Supply. It's our state tomato seed source. They have the peppers also. They have other things for your garden. Try something new every once in a while also. It works out kind of neat. Okay?
Yes. Thank you very much, Tom.
Okay.
Have a wonderful day.
You too, Jerry. Take care. We're going to go to Mike in Venice. And, Mike, how can we help you today?
Yes. Hi, Tom. Tom, in our HOA, we have three entrances. And throughout the year, we plant annuals probably three times, depending upon the season. But somebody brought up the idea of could we possibly find a perennial that would give us some sort of color rather than having to switch out annuals. And thus far, I've had one thrown out there, and I wanted to get your opinion. But somebody mentioned baby rose as something that can give a little color. But any other plants that you might think of that could be more of a perennial at a bullet at an entrance?
Okay, Mike, they're talking about planting the smaller rose variety, like the drift rose, for instance?
Yeah.
Yeah. High maintenance. I have a community that has drift roses, and I'm going to be honest, after about a year or so, they're going to pull them all out. Just because it's high maintenance, you got to stay there to fertilize them. They will still get some fungal leaf spot sometimes. You have to stay on top of the watering, the mulching, and everything. So even though they're going to look nice for a while, you have to be ready to pull them out and put something new back in. If I was going, I like this bush daisy, nice yellow flowers. There's one called Buttercup with also yellow flowers. Lantana. The thing about lantana is it's probably going to last a couple of years. When you say perennial, it doesn't mean forever, okay? It means for a period of time. And so what you're going to find is that you're still going to have to replace them after a couple of years. But those would be my one. The bush daisy, the buttercup, the lantana would probably be some of the top ones on my list. Does that help you?
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. You have a great gardening day. If you want to give us a call, you certainly can. You know the number, 1-888-45-LAWNS, 1-888-455-2967. Or Texas 23680. I see I got a couple of text messages. We'll take care of them. So if it's Saturday morning, guess what? You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. We're here in the Summit Responsible Solutions studio this morning. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, Extension Agent Emeritus with the University of Florida and a host emeritus here at Better Lawns and Gardens. Happy to have you. And if you want to have any questions answered, number 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us at 23680. I had a follow-up on this spinach feature that I did.
Okay.
And Linda said, is it a GMO? And I'm kind of reading over the information I have here. I guess it would be hard to say it's not GMO. It's a benign virus. Viruses are natural. I don't know. And the peptide, antimicrobial peptides are, I guess, natural. So, but it's being put into the plant, and so it's a genetically modified situation. So I guess you might say that it is. I am not worried. I know a lot of people do. I am not worried about genetically modified plants. I think nature does it over time. We just do it a little quicker. That's all. So as long as it's supervised, as long as it's watched, this one here is approved by the EPA. So I feel everything there is okay. So I don't know if that answers your question, Linda, but I guess you would have to say, yeah, the plant has been genetically modified to produce these peptides that fight off greening, might save our citrus industry, might save the potato industry in some areas from these bacteria. Okay, I know Teresa likes to do her top five. I said, I'm going to do my top five today also. This is the top five foliage plants for the landscape, and I have every one of these in the landscape, in my landscape. And I think the foliage plants add something during, especially the summer season. Although this year, I didn't have any problem. I didn't even have to take them in or protect them or anything. Number one, spathiphyllum. Spathiphyllum's flowering right now. It always does during the springtime. It has the big white flower portions. The white portion is actually a modified leaf. The flower's inside, but we call it a flower. But otherwise, it provides just a lot of foliage, a lot of green foliage. The secret to them is keep them in the shade. And I have seen beds of spathiphyllum around some buildings. And especially when I first came here in the 70s, it had been warm and a number of people were starting to use them. Okay, number two, caladiums. I think caladiums are great. Of course, they die back during the wintertime, although they do have a caladium now that they're talking about using at Christmas time due to the Christmas colors.
So, really?
Yeah, but in general, there's summertime, springtime through summer. If they start to come out early in the spring, they're going to start to go down by about August, but they can go into the fall. Number three on Tom's top five, crotons. I love crotons. I have a number of crotons. I have them in containers. And the reason I've kept them in containers is because they do freeze. And so I can hustle them around if I have to. I have had crotons in the ground. I've had crotons in the ground that I pulled out of the ground and put in a container. They had ice on the foliage when it happened during the wintertime. But they do well. Got many colors to them. Number four on Tom's top five foliage plants happens to be the bromeliads. And I have a large bromeliad collection. I am starting to reduce it. I'm starting to divide it. Bromeliads will grow you out of house and home. I mean, they just they just multiply. It seems like that little plant's not going to do it. You get it at the garden center, and all of a sudden, over the years, you've got tons of bromeliads. And so, regretfully, I'm putting some of them to go to the landfill.
You know, and the thing is that please listen to Tom, because I know that they, him and Teresa, know what they're talking about. But when I first started producing this show, I was like, I'm going to plant mint everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, no. And I go, sure. So what does she do? She feeds my obsession by bringing me chocolate mint to plant.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, let's see, almost 5 years later, I have got mint all over my property, and I just want to just go back and not do that.
Yeah, keep them in containers. That's the secret to it. Bromeliads, the same thing. Almost all my bromeliads are in containers. And so I can divide them. I can go through. That's what I'm doing right now. Wear gloves. My wife grew orchids. I grew bromeliads. She said the reason she wasn't growing bromeliads is because they would stick you. And they did. I can show you my arms if anybody wants to see them, where I have the results of bromeliads. Number five, top foliage plants for the landscape are ferns. And in my yard, I have alligator fern, bird's nest fern, sword fern, holly fern, and a few others. And most of these are in containers. And I can move them around if I need to. The alligator fern is several years old. It's got so big. And the bird's nest ferns are doing the same thing. So when you get these little tiny plants, just remember they do get big and can be a problem in the landscape. But my top five: spathiphyllums, caladiums, crotons, bromeliads, ferns, and hope you can enjoy some of them also. We want to go to Alice, and didn't say where she's from. Alice, good morning to you.
From Melbourne, and I do have a couple of crotons, but they never grow very tall. So I must have gotten the dwarf kind or something.
There are some that grow smaller, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah. They do add color, but they still are only about a foot and a half high, and they don't go any bigger.
Yeah, that's kind of small. Do you fertilize them?
No, I haven't fertilized them. I did fertilize the hibiscus, and I'm sorry I did, actually.
Yeah,
but
get somebody slow-release fertilizer and put it around on the crotons, and I think you'll get more growth out of them. It helps keep the color attractive also.
Okay. But my question was regarding the hibiscus. Is this a good time to trim them back? I always hate to because they have so many blossoms on it most of the year, but right now they don't seem to have too many blossoms, so maybe this is the time to cut them back.
Yeah, you can. I don't know if there is a good time to prune hibiscus unless it's right after the cold period. And then quite often we'll get some cold damage to them and things like that. But if they aren't flowering, if flowering's down, yeah, go ahead and trim them. You won't have any problem at all. So
okay.
Yeah, and what people do if they do have flowers on them, they thin them out, take some of the branches out now up to a third, and let new ones come up and start to flower. And then when they start to flower, they take out the older ones. But if you want, feel free and make sure to have water and fertilizer, and you're okay.
Okay. Thank you. I'm so glad you're there.
Well, thank you, Alice.
I wish you were in our neighborhood. and where do, and you say put iron on your lawn
to green it up? Yeah, if it's a you know, on the yellow side, you fertilize it. This is the last month you can fertilize. If you haven't fertilized, you fertilize. But otherwise, if you have fertilizers on the yellow side, use iron or one of the minor nutrient products, and you'll be just fine.
Okay. Thank you so much for all your information.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Alice. Have a great gardening day. Let's go to the text messages here. This is from Dave in Palm Bay. Says he has a foxtail palm, which is planted a little too close to the house. Can I trim the fronds that are touching, or should I remove the whole branch? Says he can't move the house. You could move the palms, but yeah, you can prune them like that. That's not a problem. You can go ahead and trim off a portion of it if you want. It would be, or you can take the whole branch off. I have a tendency to just take the branch off, but if you want to trim the fronds and kind of round them out a little bit, that would be fine. No problem.
Yes. And we would like to, Teresa left a little message and a little sticky note in the studio behind. She said she wanted to make sure that Beverly in Tallahassee gets a happy birthday wish from her since she's not here. So happy birthday, Beverly.
Beverly, happy birthday. Beverly's a good friend of mine, too. I didn't realize it was her birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she left a little sticky note, and she says, please wish her a happy birthday.
Yeah. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Beverly. Happy birthday to you.
That's really good.
Da, 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 da.
Usually people sound really bad. That was good. Very impressive.
That's really bad. Let's see what we have here. Let's see. There was one here. There's a plant, the butterfly vine, and wanted to let everybody know that it's an easy one to grow. And I like the butterfly vine. You can grow it. I think it's. I haven't grown it in a long time, and I think it's kind of cold sensitive. So we don't know. Well, let's see what we have here.
Did you already answer Dave from Palm Bay about the foxtail palm?
Yeah, I answered that one there. And what do you want to know about, would like to ask Tom, the current procedure for planting a banana plant in a 3-foot deep pot, a little over 20 feet wide. Just make sure you put it into the pot. That should do fine. It would probably keep the growth down. We have dwarf banana plants. And I would just go through and make sure wherever you got it from, plant it at the original depth. Now, you may have to stake it in the beginning. Unless it's coming out of another pot. If it's coming out of another pot, you probably won't have to. But if it's a banana plant has a little bit of height to it, then you'll probably have to go ahead and stake it a little bit until it gets established. But in a 20-inch wide, 3-foot deep,
mm-hmm.
That should be fine.
Yeah.
That's
Daryl, the earth box lady. So yeah. Thank you, Daryl.
Yeah, shouldn't have any problem growing it there. Just make sure you keep it moist and keep it fertilized. Banana plants really grow. They need a lot of fertilizer, so they do very well. I do have a quick question here. It says, we've recently started planting daylilies. The name suggests they bloom only less a day. How long do the plants keep producing? Can they be divided? They can be divided. What daylily people will do is they'll cut the tops back, and then they'll go ahead and dig them and divide them. Wait until they finish flowering, and some of them can flower going all the way through probably July, maybe into August, depending on the variety there. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, sponsors, for this first hour. And, of course, we're coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studio. And, you know, you can go ahead and text us. You can do that right now, 23680. We do have a guest coming up, Bob Hodling. He's going to talk about his gardening experiences. And so we're really loving to have you with us. This is Tom McCubbin. If it's Saturday morning, guess what? You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.